Hey, this is Daryl Etherington, and I'm here with
Anthony Ha.
That was perfect. Good timing.
And yeah, nailed it.
We didn't even plan that.
Yeah.
We're here recording original content, the podcast from TechCrunch, where me and Anthony talk about everything streaming and everything original. All right, we got some cool news for this week. Cool news for the cool kids.
That's what we're going to call this segment, just cool news.
Yeah, nice.
You come with a cool news sound effect.
Yep. Yeah, we'll put one in there later, like a, you know, like that.
Probably. Right, or like just somebody shaking a newspaper.
Oh, yeah, that is the sound I associate with news. People shaking cool it news. Out, the snap.
Yeah, cool news.
Yeah, there you go. Or you might just have to imagine that you heard that. Let's go.
All right. So I think the first thing I wanted to talk about was Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook. It's today. It's fresh.
It's fresh. That's right.
Yesterday, as you're listening to this, but today as we're recording this.
That's right. We are speaking to you from the past, but hopefully not too far in the past.
No. Yes, right. Facebook, and what did they do?
So they a little while ago, they announced something called Facebook Watch, which is going to be their... basically the part of the app and the website where you can just find all this video content. And that is now, you know, as of Thursday, live for everyone in the United States.
Oh, I was going to say, I don't have it, but I'm not in the United States.
That's true. This is your deep, dark secret, is that you are in Canada, which is often included just as North America, but maybe not in this case.
Maybe not. It might be there. Maybe I just don't know where to find it. Can you tell us a bit about this and maybe what you see when you go to look at it?
Yes.
Maybe there are other internationals who want to know.
I'm not looking at my app right now because I turned my phone off when we podcast, but I'm looking at the screenshots and, it's in the app and it's going to be like a separate tab, and it's basically just going to have, it's going to look like, I mean, if you looked at other apps that have video, it's pretty much the same. It's going to be sort of, you know, a big giant featured image of like the main show and then some other highlighted content. And it is basically just Facebook, I think, has been talking for a while about how they want people to share a ton of video in Facebook. I mean, including that's what we do on TechCrunch.
Yeah.
But like, instead of just having it be sort of like this long, you know, stream of content that you may or may not see, and which I think, you know, at least in the past, I think has been an issue where like it may spike and, you know, get a lot of attention, but like try to find it like a week later and it just has completely disappeared. And this is more like, hey, like here are popular shows. Here are, if you've like a show, you can like go in and see like each episode of the show and not have it feel like so kind of mixed in with everything else and potentially disappearing.
Right. And they also have original content in there, right? That they've come up with themselves or partnered with people to come up with.
That's right. They have, I think there were, I mean, there were some announcements when this first launched a few weeks ago, from like news publishers. I think like Hearst is doing some stuff.
Yeah. And I got some pitches too. I'm trying to like find a few of them. Inverse, which is a 2-year-old digital media and entertainment company.
That's you right. Know. They do like science and science fiction stuff, basically.
Right.
They're kind of, in some ways, I mean, they're not exactly like TechCrunch, but in some ways, if you read TechCrunch, you're probably going to be interested in some of the stuff in verse.
Yeah. So they have a couple shows, original series, including Big Ideas with Little Kids, which is about famous scientists talking to kids and trying to explain to them like really, really complex concepts, I guess, specifically 7-year-olds. And then one called Button Mashers, which is like a profile series where they check out the top like esports professional athletes and do profiles on them. So those actually sound pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, I think the main thing is it's not going to be, at least the initial lineup is that it's definitely like sort of like newsy kind of like bite-sized types of videos. Not to say that it's not going to be serious or not going to have substance, but we're not talking about like House of Cards here, at least not yet.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. These look like basically some of the stuff that we've spitballed too, or actually done on TechCrunch as well, right? For our shows and series, like the ones that Anthony used to host.
That's right.
Me,
so like
being you, Anthony.
Right. Like so similar to like how we do like Crunch Report, like a daily news recap, things like that.
Right, right.
So like I think like NASA is gonna have a science show, which I think sounds pretty cool, like a 4 to 5 minute science show.
Oh, that's super
National
cool.
Geographic. NAS? Oh, God, this is so embarrassing.
NAS Daily, yeah?
NAS Daily, but apparently not the rapper.
Nothing
the
to do with the rapper, yes.
NAS is having a show, which is, yeah, maybe everyone else understands this distinction. I did not.
It took me a while. I had to hear it. I think I actually heard it on another podcast, and then I was like, oh, that's different. Okay.
It all makes sense now.
But probably, yeah, this is another one of those things where like we should know about this YouTuber person and we don't because we're old.
Right. And I guess so the other, that's true. We're basically dead. But before we die, I guess one of the questions I have about Facebook, like doing video is like that when it's just in your stream and you're just like, oh yeah, sure, let's see that. I mean, I'll be honest, I don't actually watch a ton of video on Facebook anyway, but in as much as I do, it's when it just sort of is like, oh, that seems like a fun thing to watch for 30 seconds.
Right.
And the question is, you know, are there that many people who really want to dig deeper into that, who are going to open up the Facebook app specifically to find videos to watch and will go to the watch section to do that?
Yeah, that's true. My consumption on Facebook has always been like super casual in a way that it is not even on YouTube, right? Like it's like usually a tasty video goes by and it's like, oh, right. I would like to make that food or whatever, or not even like I would like to imagine that I will someday make that food and then I'll watch and see how it's done.
Fantasize about making the food.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Fully knowing that I'm never going to do it. But it's never like, oh, I want to see that more. I want to see that like longer and more and come back to it. It's like, I mean, all of Facebook is that to me. All of Facebook is never a destination. Facebook is like a begrudging sort of like, well, I've exhausted all other like time wasting loops or other things that I've done to like nervously deal with this wait time that I have or whatever. I guess I'll open this app because it will eat up the rest of whatever time I have to spend. That's entirely what it is to me. It's never like, I want to go here. Like I have a positive desire to go here. It's like,
right.
I need to kill some time and this is easily accessible to me.
Right. And it's never, I mean, I think never purposeful. It's never like, this is the specific thing I'm looking for. I mean, I guess maybe some people, you know, we talk about essentially cyber stalk. Like you're like, hey, I want to know like what this person has been up to. Then you might like search in, but I never. So you know, I guess basically it would definitely be a very new behavior that they're trying to encourage, and we'll see if they're successful. I mean, certainly they have just such an enormous audience that they can afford to sort of experiment in this way. And even if, you know, 1% of the Facebook audience makes that leap, like that's still a huge audience. But we'll see.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It could be, and like you could see that kind of behavior evolving from what I was just talking about, like to where you just tap in the app and then you tap over to the watch thing. If that's your preferred way to kill time is to look at videos, which I think Facebook assumes is for a lot of millennial and younger audiences based on sort of like YouTube success and maybe Snapchat success and stuff too, then this could translate into a win for them. But it does seem like they're just trying again to kind of, like they're envious of YouTube's position there and they want to kind of back end their way into the same sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think there's on the one side is being jealous of YouTube, but on the other hand, like, you know, recognizing that a lot of video consumption is happening on Facebook and just trying to create a better home for it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That too. Do you think that Facebook, or do you know that Facebook is like paying partners to do these?
I don't know that they've said publicly anything about that. I mean, it's probably a safe assumption that there's probably that some of the initial ones or some of the initial partners are being paid. But I don't know that that's been confirmed right now.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything about that, but I would assume or something, or like maybe just a guarantee of like prime placement and stuff. I don't even know if we're working on it, to be honest. Maybe we are.
They never tell us anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe next week they're just going to be like, we're going to put a camera in the room with you while you guys recorded original content.
And oh, my God.
Just put an, just two, our two faces.
Real
for
close,
an
like
hour
fisheye
plus.
View.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be so bad.
But yeah, and like a little below, you know, just to get a little, all the fat there.
Yeah, yeah. Make it look especially lurid and unappealing. Yeah. I think that if you want a taste of what that would be like, you can actually go check out some content I posted today. I posted a look at the Essential phones, like 360 camera, because they sent one of those over.
Yeah.
And my video test is me walking back from the beer store where I was buying beer. And I give a little speech explaining what I'm doing. So it's but that would basically be what we would do for the podcast recording, I think. Yeah.
Right. So we're definitely gonna do that.
In immersive 360, so you can be right here in my disaster of an office with me too. So that's in the books.
I mean, to be fair, I think a lot of Facebook Live stuff really isn't that much better than that. It really is just like, hey, here we are.
Yeah.
And then just sort of, you know, talking.
No, you're right. That is 100% accurate. So we wouldn't really be like making the internet net worse. It would just be par for the course.
Yeah.
So is that enough about Facebook Watch?
Yeah, I mean,
it's something I'll watch. But like as an observer.
That doesn't even count as like a pun or like that's not even a play on words. You just said the same word again.
Shut up. It was great. I'm on a roll. Did you see my Uber one the other day?
That was also bad. This was worse.
Because Uber is...
Because this is the laziest.
They have a new CEO, so I said Uber.
That was, yeah.
I put it in the daily newsletter, too. It's everywhere.
I think I missed that one.
I just want to make sure that it gets good spread.
Right. Got to get those eyeballs. Kind of turn it into a meme. All right, so next thing we wanted to talk about was Hulu.
Yeah.
And specifically Hulu Live TV, they announced that they've added the CW, which yes. means that they're going to have live TV from all of the five major broadcast networks.
Nice. That's a good get.
CW, I think, has been like sort of like on and off Hulu, not so much the live TV part, but just Hulu in general. And so... it's just, I think, yeah, like having them on just seems like a great move.
Yeah. It's a good way to make it a compelling, complete alternative. And it's also a good way to get those teens, right? Like that's the CW, I think anyway, I think they still aim at that demographic. And also,
yeah, that's my understanding is a lot of their content. I mean, like this, even like the superhero stuff and everything is, you know, getting, I don't know about teens specifically, but sort of a younger demographic than some of the other networks.
Yeah. And 35-year-old men who enjoy comics a lot, because I watch
right.
all
not
of those shows.
Weird or sad at all.
No, nothing, nothing wrong with that. Those shows are great though. Do you watch them?
I've watched The Flash, and I tried to make my sister watch The Flash, and after the first episode, she became really angry at me and refused to listen to watch another episode. I think they're fun. I mean, you know, like a lot of, I think they're fun, but like not great. And yeah. so there's this element of like, well, you know, there's other stuff I could be watching. I think like The Flash, for example, is one that I think sometimes if I'm like home and just kind of bored and have an hour to kill, you know, I'm like, all right, like I'll put it on, see what, but like, it's not, I mean, like when you, especially when you have like shows that I think genuinely have really good writing, like Daredevil and Jessica Jones, like it's kind of like why spend time on The Flash?
Yeah.
Even if you need your superhero fix.
I feel like you're being a little bit unkind. Like why does something have to have a good writing and good production value and good acting to merit your time?
That it's, you know, I think it's, that's a good question. I mean, it really gets to, you know, sort of the bigger question about why anything needs anything in this world.
Yeah.
I don't think they're bad. Again, I don't have anything against them. And I think, and certainly regardless of what I think, they definitely have these very devoted fan bases and they spun out into this, you know, whole like TV universe, which is also interesting because it doesn't overlap with the movie stuff that DC is doing at all. And they're going to, you know, going to have two different actors playing The Flash, which is interesting in its own way.
Yeah, it is. I wonder if they're going to wink at that, because they already do so much multiverse stuff in the Flash TV show that you could easily see them being like, oh, yeah, it's another multiverse.
Right. I feel like they could at least wink to it and then just move on. Like, they don't have to talk about it. It doesn't have to be a big thing.
Yeah. But it's, to me, like, they're... I mean, I agree with you in all the stuff, the criticisms that you have for those shows, but I do watch all of them, including Supergirl, which was on ABC, but then moved over to the CW.
It was on CBS, I think.
CBS, that's right. But yeah, I still watch them all, and I kind of watch them the same way that I watched, like, Xena or Hercules, basically. Like, they're like a harmless, fluffy pleasure with, like, won't fill you up, that kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's interesting because I think that sometimes when people, especially TV critics, which we are not, we are functioning as critics, but we're not professional critics.
Right. Except we get paid for this, sort of.
We do. I mean, I spent an hour today, like during like regular working hours, watching The Tick. It was great. but like, I think, you know, there's sometimes this idea of like, man, like, who needs junk food TV anymore? You've got all this good stuff. Like, you can just watch great television all the time. Like, who needs mediocre shows? But it turns out that I think for most people, sometimes you want to be, and you know, this will vary from person to person, but sometimes you want to be watching something very serious and like really well made, and you want to be watching The Sopranos, you want to be watching The Wire, you want to be watching Mad Men, and there's other times you want to be watching The Flash.
Yeah.
And I think that's totally fair.
Yeah, I think so too. And, yeah, so I'm happy to see that that'll be on. Again, this is an America Canada thing, but it would be a driving decision making factor for me in favor of Hulu if I was like in the U.S. and in the market for an over the top streaming service. Now that there's so many of them.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that. So right now, my roommate and I have traditional TV, but I mean, I'm definitely very seriously thinking about getting Hulu Live TV.
Yeah, Hulu's the one that wins out for you?
Yeah, I think so. It seems like, I mean, a lot of the, you know, it's one of those things, and I think our coworker, Sarah Perez, does a pretty good job of, like, breaking down, like, the content mix and the features, and to a certain extent, I think, I mean, these services aren't that different, but it seems like, I mean, Hulu just has the support of so many of the major media companies and networks that, and you can also then add on some of these, like, cable subscriptions like Showtime that it seems like a good bet. And then they also have their own original content, like The Handmaid's Tale.
Right. Yeah. That's a big driver too. And it's like Handmaid's Tale really knocked it out of the park. I wouldn't say any of their other things have been so stellar or terrific or noteworthy thus far, but.
You're right. I think, you know, we've talked, maybe I think alluded to that. This Handmaid's Tale was like their first real home run, I think, by most accounts.
Yeah. This is somewhat related, but it just came up actually in my feed, so I wanted to bring it up in real time.
Look at that, breaking news, except it won't be breaking when you listen to this. Yeah,
we might have a post on it, but maybe not, probably not actually. The DC live action Teen Titans show has some casting news. So they found Dick Grayson playing Robin, and it's going to be Brenton Thwaites.
Oh, that's a guy who I've seen in movie trailers and commercials, but possibly never in an actual movie.
Oh, he's been in an actual movie. Well, you probably haven't seen him in the movie, but he's been in. Oh, I see. Yes. He wasn't just in the trailer and then not.
No. I just mean, I'm like vaguely aware of who he is, but I don't like have any idea of whether he's good or not.
Yeah. Their headline one for him in this Hollywood Reporter article is Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales. So I
right.
think
that is a movie that.
No,
wait, I did
is
not
that the
see
new one?
I think it's either the fourth one or the fifth one.
Well, in that case, Deadman. I probably didn't see it. But he's also
No. Yeah. The new one is I think Deadman Tell No Tales.
Oh, okay. Definitely didn't see it then. And he was in Maleficent as well. So I saw that. I just don't remember who he was.
But, so he did a great job.
But yeah, but the interesting thing about that show is not really so much that this guy is acting in it, but that it's a streaming show, which is going to launch in 2018 on DC's digital platform. They're going to have a DC Comics digital streaming platform, and the show is going to be on it. So,
have they said anything about what else is going to be on that platform? It's not going to be the CW shows, right?
I mean, I can't imagine that it would be unless they've worked out a licensing agreement with them. And maybe they have.
Or it's just the back catalog. But I don't know that they would. It seems like if I were the CW, I would not be happy about new episodes going up on this new service.
Right. Yeah. And then like it's Warner Brothers. They could do the movies, right?
Yeah. Right.
That, that's about it.
Right. Those movies that everyone loves.
Oh, maybe the animated, like there's like a lot of DC animated movies. Maybe they could put those up. I'm not sure.
That could be it. Yeah. Yeah, that would make sense.
There's so many of those. That would almost merit its own alone. And I love those. They're always pretty good. Do you watch those ever?
I've probably seen pretty much every episode of the animated series, Batman, the animated series from back in the day, but I don't think I've seen anything more recent than that.
Ah, yeah, yeah. There's like, I'd say there's like at least one a year. And the creator of the animated series is, I think, still an executive producer on most of them.
Yeah, what's his name? Bruce Timm.
Yeah,
because they call it the Timverse.
Yes. Yeah. 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 But they usually have great voice acting talent and good stories, like pulled from the actual best storylines in the comics. So they usually do a pretty good job. Nathan Fillion is often in them, which is important.
The guy, you know, the guy keeps working.
Yeah. Yeah. He knows how to work. He's a prolific. Prolific is the word for him, right? Maybe not the best thespian of all time. I can't say bad things about Nathan Fillion on this podcast because he might hear it.
He will definitely hear it.
I have a signed Nathan Fillion magazine that I bought off of eBay once.
Listen, I think he was amazing in Firefly and Serenity.
Right.
And he seems to be perfectly okay in everything else.
Okay. We'll go with that. That's
I mean, I don't think I've seen any episodes of whatever his cop show is.
I watched a few.
It's not Bones. That's the David Boreanaz one. It's
Castle.
Castle. Yeah. Castle. Yeah, I've not seen a single episode of Castle.
But if there was a Castle and a Bones crossover, you probably would not notice because it would be no different on either side.
I might watch that just to see what happens.
Yeah. But. Okay. So that's the Hulu news. What else have we got here?
So we've got something you wrote about Amazon having a new series called Lore, which is based on a podcast. We've now exhausted everything I know about Lore. So why don't you tell us about it?
Oh, you are not familiar with Lore.
No.
So Lore is like a fairly long running podcast from Aaron Mankey, who is a novelist. And it is basically like a spooky tales podcast, kind of. He essentially every week he like does around a theme and he always has like a sort of a cornerstone story. He'll like lead off with maybe a bunch of stories just told very briefly. But the bulk of each episode is just him on his own telling kind of a spooky story from myth or legend. Not usually myth, like more like folk tales and legends. From like, you know, any time, basically. But usually they have some amount of documentation backing them up. And they're, you know, they're not like totally ridiculous, just like made up shit. But it's also like, okay, that has some questionable veracity at the same time, right? Like there are things where you're like, maybe that was just people were crazy back in old times or something. But It's very well done. It's just him talking over kind of classical music. He works with a composer, and the composer actually like produces original music for it. It's a weird format for a podcast. It's not something I would normally think I would like, but it just works really well. And I actually, when I found out about it, which was probably 3 or 4 months ago, I just kind of binged all of the existing episodes on a couple of flights that I'd taken for work because they're about 20 minutes each.
Right. And so we should say the news is not so much that the series is happening, but that they've released this teaser. Did you like it?
Yeah, it looks like it was very short, right? But it looks like it kind of will faithfully translate the things that I like about the actual podcast, which is to say it'll be more like a sort of the same kind of storytelling, but with a visual element.
Yeah.
And that will include like actors acting and doing like dramatizations of the stuff he's talking about. So it's interesting. It's going to be a mixed media project is what they described it as. So it's got that, it's got animation, it's got some actual archival like documentary footage. So
right. I guess what I'm also wondering is just have there been any good adaptations of, like, you know, TV / streaming adaptations of podcasts so far?
I'm just trying to think. I think one that's still yet to be done is the Reply All podcast. Isn't that in the works?
Oh, I think that's right. Yeah. Yeah. I remember hearing about that.
And there's like a show based on Gimlet, kind of. That's like a sitcom.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
There is. I wish that I could do more. Oh, wait. That's right. So it's called Startup? No. It's not called Startup. Wait, so, no, it's about
Gimlet
Startup.
Gimlet has a podcast. Yeah. Right, okay.
So it's Zach Braff. It's a Zach Braff thing.
Oh, I'm so excited.
A single single camera pilot, and he's playing the role of Alex Bloomberg, basically.
Okay.
In this show, and it's about like starting up a podcast business and running a podcast, basically.
Yeah, because the other example, which is not purely a podcast, but I think a lot of probably our listeners experience it as a podcast now, is This American Life, which did have a TV show for a couple of years, and by all accounts was a pretty solid TV show, but I just think probably didn't have a large enough viewership to justify continue making it. So like, when you think about This American Life now, the fact that there was this TV show is just this like weird blip in its history where they're like, oh yeah, we did that for a little while, whatever.
Yeah. So that, yeah, I think that most of them end up meeting that same fate, if I can. I mean, not podcast related stuff, but even stuff that's like, oh, this was a thing that was on the internet and people liked it on the internet, and let's make it into a TV show. So including,
right,
like Twitter accounts or whatever. What was the one, like the Shit My Dad Says
thing? Yeah, Shit My Dad Says, which had William Shatner in it, which is insane to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That is really weird to remember.
Yeah. But,
that one didn't last that long. And then the other one that I still have the only episode of somewhere, and I keep it basically for archival purposes, is Gizmodo the Gadget Testers. Have you seen that?
Oh, no.
It's Gizmodo had a show on BBC. I forget if it was BBC America or original. I think it was BBC America. But it was like, they tested a bunch of vacuums in the first episode. And then they did other stuff. It was like, it watched like they were trying to do the car men show.
Gosh,
not the Grand Tour, but the thing that preceded it, because that would have been at the same time,
right? I want to say, like, I keep wanting to say Iron Chef, but it's not. Master Gear. Oh God,
Top Gear.
I got there. I got there eventually.
Yeah, so Top Gear. It was like Top Gear, but for like gadgets, was clearly what they were trying to do. And it was weird. I think Joel Johnson might have been in it. It was very strange. Anyways, if you can find a copy of that somewhere, it's an interesting thing to check out and be like, oh, what the fuck is this? So go take a look.
So I think the last thing I wanted to talk about was the trailer hitting for Jerry Seinfeld's new comedy special. It's going to be called Jerry Before Seinfeld. And this is partly interesting just because Netflix has what has been reported to be $100 million deal with Seinfeld. It includes two specials plus old and new episodes of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, plus potentially some development on some other shows. But I mean, this special is a huge part of what they're paying for. And I think most of us on the team were not super excited about it. We were even talking about having you watch the trailer live on the podcast before we decided that that would be incomprehensible. But so you watched it right before. What did you think of it?
It was, let me preface this. Like, I don't like Jerry Seinfeld. I don't like him. Don't like his comedy stylings. I don't really like the show Seinfeld, which is hard to say. But given all that, the trailer looked awful. It looked so bad. It was like him telling really bad jokes, like just the worst dad jokes. And I don't know. I've never watched Getting Coffee in Cars comedians or whatever the hell it's
Cars
called.
Getting Coffee, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That looks bad also. So, yeah. I was watching it and I was just kind of like, Like, it wouldn't have been a good reaction video because my reaction was just like absolute silence. And then right. Maybe.
But like angry silence. Like if you like really listened closely, you would hear teeth grinding.
Yeah, my fingernails digging into my chair arms. Exactly, yeah.
Well, because I think that Seinfeld is somebody who is, you know, I mean, honestly, it's not really to my taste, but I think part of it is just that he was like the best / most famous comedian in this very specific type of comedy, you know, which is sort of encapsulated by just like, what is the deal with, I guess I did just try to imitate him very badly. Uh-huh. And it went not well. But, you know,
I
like
he was
that
here
kind
in
of like
the room with me.
Right, but like, you know, that kind of like, what is the deal with like humor, and which I think, you know, then apparently, you know, he did to good effect on the show. Again, I liked the show, didn't love it, you know, don't really have a ton of desire to go back and revisit it. And, but I'd heard that, you know, but that because he was so successful, you just, at a certain point, you're like, okay, I get it. Like, that's what he does. I don't necessarily think, you know, that it needs to be, you know, that it just feels so familiar and kind of tired.
Yeah.
And I had thought that I'd sort of heard that now he's back doing stand-up. He's kind of got that fire in his belly again. He's doing this like really like fun show like about like with comedians. And so I was kind of hopeful that like this you'd maybe see a different side of him in this trailer at least. And it kind of was like, oh, well that's Jerry Seinfeld, all right, doing Jerry Seinfeld jokes about when he was younger.
Yeah. That was exactly what it was. And it is that. I think maybe it's unfair to him because it's that just the stereotypical what's the deal with thing, right? Which is a very easy way to make fun of him now. And maybe, and I don't know, I don't remember. Maybe at the time that was somewhat novel, but now it's just like so painful to hear. And that was basically what he was doing in this trailer. So if that's your
although thing, I will say that he did not literally say what is the deal with at any point in the trailer. He may say it during the special, I don't know, but in the trailer he does not say that, but it's all stuff that's like that.
Yeah, I think that I wonder if he's ever said that for real. I mean, maybe he hasn't, and maybe that's just
God,
yeah, maybe he just never said it.
You just blew my mind.
Wow. But yeah, he also has jazz in the background or something, and that was just also like my eyes rolled so hard that I no longer can see. My vision has been removed from me because it was like so. I was just like, go compare your car collection to that stupid asshole Jay. What's his name? Leno.
You wow, guys, it's all coming out now.
Come on, Jay Leno is the worst. Everyone hates Jay Leno.
I mean, I feel like Jay Leno I feel the same way about him. I mean, not exact. I like Seinfeld maybe slightly more than Leno, but it's more that like I don't enjoy either of their work particularly, but I don't dislike them. I'm like, all right, you're fine. Clearly you're bringing happiness to somebody. I don't want to have anything to do with it.
Oh, you're so kind. Anthony,
I mean, there's other things
kindness.
That I actively dislike. This, I'm just like, it's just very much not for me.
All right. We've established who's the good guy and who's the bad guy here. We don't need to rub it in, Anthony.
That's fair. so we should say the special comes out in just a few weeks on September 19th.
So then you can hate watch it yourself.
Right. I think probably from the sounds of things, we probably won't review it on here because it would just be like us being really angry the whole time.
It's too poisonous of an episode, yeah.
Right. But we'll see. I mean, depending. I think there's a bunch of other stuff coming out at the same time. So we'll have our attention elsewhere. But we'll see.
Yeah. I think one of the other news things too, you said this is the last one, but I do want to mention in passing at least the Cara Delevingne casting on that Carnival Row show that Amazon
is doing.
Yeah. Right. Just
fantasy noir set in a neo-Victorian city.
Yeah, and that was more like Cara Delevingne is fine. I've enjoyed her in previous stuff I've seen her in, but like it was more the news of the show itself, which had escaped my attention previously. Like the fact that this thing, which also stars Orlando Bloom, and that was announced kind of last week, I think, it's going to be an 8-episode series with like a sort of a hard-boiled noir detective story set in this Victorian world where fantasy creatures also inhabit like this human city because they've had to seek refuge from their own world. And I just think it sounds super good as a premise.
I think this is also, this post is just like the first TechCrunch post I've ever seen that includes the phrase fairy folk, and fairy spelled F-A-E-R-I-E. Like, yeah. It is like intensely nerdy. I'm really excited.
Exactly. It sounds perfect. It sounds like something you would make up for like your D&D campaign or something. As like, all right, here's the setting. I'm the DM. And then this or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only person I could get to sit when I was sit still for me DMing was my little sister. And it's one of many traumatic things I did to her.
Oh my goodness, that and Flash?
Yeah. She doesn't talk to me anymore. I think the one other thing that's worth noting about it is that it is a straight to series order. It's getting 8 episodes because up until now, Amazon has mostly done this pilot process where and it's sort of taking the traditional TV pilot process where you make one episode of a show and decide what's going to become a series, except it does that publicly. So you can go and watch all the pilots and it uses that data to determine, you know, what's actually going to become a show. And I don't think Amazon is abandoning that, but at the same time, I think they're also competing, you know, for talent with, you know, Netflix and HBO and
right.
Hulu and everyone else. And some of these places are a lot more willing to just be like, this is a great idea. We'll give you the money to make 8 episodes, 10 episodes, 12 episodes. So, you know, if you're competing for a show, sometimes you have to be willing to write that big check right away as well.
Yeah. That's a good like sort of perspective on why they would do that kind of thing. Cause it's true. When Amazon started out, it was probably a lot harder for some of these productions to go and just sell their idea directly to Netflix. But Netflix has such a large budget for acquiring content and a growing budget. And they're also not the only ones out there now. Like, I mean, Apple has its $1 billion budget too.
Right.
So theoretically, if you have this and you have strong people attached to it, you could go sell it directly to series somewhere else. And that's probably part of the negotiation now, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And when you've got, you know, some fairly big stars attached, I imagine that.
The movie stars. It. Movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, movie stars. Although we should say that, I mean, as somebody who did see Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets and, in fact, reviewed it on another podcast, The Geek's Guide to the Galaxy, go check it out. But, like, you know, Cara Delevingne is, I mean, she was in Suicide Squad, which is very successful. Not exactly beloved, but made a ton of money.
Right.
But I don't think is quite on the level. Like, she's famous, but she's not, you know, a huge movie star yet.
Yeah, that's true.
She's a famous person who has been in movies.
Yes. And then also, Orlando Bloom isn't really that famous anymore.
He had a spoiler cameo in the latest Pirates. But other than that, I mean, the only really other thing he's done is the Hobbit movies, which, again, made a ton of money.
You do.
Not exactly.
You don't have to warn about spoilers in the latest Pirates of the Caribbean movie. Because if you wanted to watch that show and are mad about it being ruined, or that movie, you are wrong.
I like the first three movies. The three that are directed by Gore Verbinski, I think, you know, none of them is perfect, and they have some script problems, but I think are like beautiful, interesting movies.
I agree with that. But I think just this one, I remember with this one specifically, they showed the extended sort of like clip from it in front of maybe Spider-Man, some actual good movie. I forget which one. It wouldn't have been Spider-Man. It would have been one of the Guardians of the Galaxy or something. But
maybe, yeah.
It was awful. And it was like, why did you do this? How did you decide we're going to cut out this segment from this movie? And this is the best thing we can do to show people, to get them to watch it. Because it was literally like, this is boring, and the parts that aren't boring are either offensive or are just Johnny Depp rolling his eyes around and grinning. Like, it's awful. No one wants to see that. Why did you do this? I felt like someone was trying to torpedo the career of like another executive at Disney or something, and that was why they chose to do this. It was very, very strange. Anyways, that's my aside
Right. Well, it's also just like, there's no universe where I can imagine why there need to be like five movies in this series and potentially more. That just seems really stupid.
Yeah. It's cinematic universe. That's why. That's the answer to everything now.
I feel like one was good. Three, like, all right, you're already stretching it.
Yeah.
Beyond that, it's tough.
Too much indulgence.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that wraps up the news. So we're going to move on to our review of The Tick on Amazon.
Yeah, nice. I am excited about talking about this. Do we want to? Yeah, we'll do general impressions first. This is typically how we do it. So no spoilers. You can continue to listen, and we will tell you when there will be spoilers.
Right, and so from what I understand, actually, like we were talking about that Amazon pilot process, and that was something that happened with The Tick. That actually, the first episode went live a year ago, and now there are five additional episodes. Did you watch the first episode when it came out?
I did not watch the first episode when it came out. I only watched it now when we watched them all.
Yeah, I mean, because I remember hearing like rumblings about it that it was like, oh, this weirder, sort of darker version of The Tick, which I was never like a hardcore fan, but I watched the cartoon. I saw a few episodes of the live action show like before, like, you know, from like 15 years ago.
Yeah, same.
And like, I was like, why would you do that?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
It did seem like a weird one to choose to bring back into the ether, because it was like, I guess it had a very dedicated following, right? But it's one of those reboots where you're like, oh, yeah, I guess you could reboot that. But why? But okay.
Right.
Fine.
And if you're going to do it, why do it as this sort of like, you know, gritty version of it? And I think particularly because the actor in the live action in the Fox series, Patrick Warburton, I think like he was, when he was cast, or like when you just saw him, you're like, oh, he's perfect for it.
Yeah.
And then the person they cast here, like Peter Serafinowicz, when I heard that, I was like, that doesn't sound, everything I'd seen him in, I was like, he doesn't seem like The Tick at all.
No, exactly. It seemed like very strange casting. And it was also, it seemed so hard to overcome. It's weird because even though the actual, like, the TV show from the 90s was not that long-lived, I think a couple seasons, maybe three seasons.
I think it may have just been even, well, so there's the animated series, and there's the, which is in the 90s, and then there was the live-action series from, like, 2001.
Oh, it was 2001, okay.
I think, yeah, I'm going to double-check. Yeah,
I got
2001.
The dates confused, but the, yeah.
And that was just one season.
Yeah. One season. And that was like, it, but even though it was only that, it just seemed so tied to Warburton. Like, it seemed like he is The Tick, like, eternally in my mind from that. So yeah, I thought it was going to be a big challenge to do that. But what did you think?
Overall, I was totally wrong. And I thought like this new approach to The Tick is great and is really funny, but like has these sort of elements of darkness, and especially like Serafinowicz, I think, is just, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. I think that's right.
I think you are, yeah.
Yeah. He's amazing. He like is just this like great as this just completely like cheerful, oblivious, but like really funny character. Like I think, and like he just like totally inhabits it. And he just seems so different from anything else I've seen him in.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think it was, cause I, you know, you've seen him around. He's kind of like a fairly, successful character actor, like at the moment, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's in a lot.
Right.
He was in the most memorable thing recently, I guess, was Guardians of the Galaxy, the original Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right. Yeah.
But he was like a Nova Corps member, I believe.
Right.
But he, yeah, he was.
Well, he's the guy who like delivers the line, "What a bunch of a-holes."
Yeah. So he's famous like, from the trailer, basically. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
But yeah, I did think he did a great job.
Pretty much his entire role in the film.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but good job with The Tick. I think in general, good casting. I would say with the exception of the main villain there.
Oh, yeah.
I don't love him or his portrayal. It's nothing.
So when you say
him.
The main villain, you mean Jackie Earle Haley as the Terror?
Yes. Yeah.
And he's doing this like weird hissing, like there's something wrong with his throat, and he likes doing this like weird old man voice.
Yeah, yeah. And he was Rorschach in The Watchmen. Was
yes,
but that was the only thing I knew him from. But I recognized his name.
He also was the like, new Freddy in the remake of A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, that makes sense too. Yeah, I thought he was. I don't know. The voice thing was a lot. It was a lot to take, and especially combined with kind of the attempted humor that they were doing with it. The two things. I don't know. It was just a bit over the top. I think it was the one thing in the whole show, actually, that was like a little too over the top for me, which is surprising because I thought it was going to be, in general, much more of that.
Yeah, I wasn't crazy about it either. I think, again, without going too much into spoilers, I think I didn't mind it because he was used pretty sparingly in those first six episodes that we saw.
Right.
And there's one scene in the first episode which I think he's really actually effective and very scary in. So like the rest of it, I wasn't crazy about it, but I didn't mind it as much.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. I guess. We'll have to see. You're right. It's not like he was like a very prominent part of these first few episodes. So, and I don't want to say anything else before. I don't want to get into spoilers, but I will say The only reason I remember his name is because it's like a serial killer name.
So, it really is.
Yeah. It's the three name, and then Earl being one of them,
right?
And Jackie being another one.
Just the whole package is quite unsettling.
Yeah, it's all generally pretty murdery. Sorry if you're a listener. he's not a listener.
He's not a listener yet.
You're right, exactly. Yeah. Okay, do you want to get into spoiler stuff, or should we give a verdict on whether people should waste their time or not waste their time or whatever? Let's do that.
Yeah, I would say my verdict would be it's worth it. But also the other thing to keep in mind is I think which you were already kind of warning me about is the pilot, weirdly enough, is very different from the rest of the show. Like the pilot is much darker, and I think they didn't quite have that balance of like humor and seriousness yet. And so a lot of it is really just about this, you know, main character, Arthur, and, you know, like this the horrible tragedy in his life and how bummed out he is.
Yeah.
And that episode is like, I mean, I think it's actually really well done, but like you watch that and you're like, I don't know if I can watch any more of this. And the rest of the show still has some of that, but it's much more fun. And so I would say also like, if you watch the pilot and you're like, I'm not sure about this, like go at least one more episode in.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I think they were made at different times. Cause I think there was a, there was some reference to the costume change, the Tick's costume
right.
change.
He says, like, Arthur at one point says to him, "You look different." And the Tick says, "Yes, I do." And then they just move on.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, cool. Then let's now declare this the spoiler zone. So if you are afraid of spoilers, please retreat and go watch these six episodes, which are not that long. So it doesn't actually take that long to watch. Yeah, and then... So let's get into it. The Tick.
So how did you feel about the overall like arc of the six episodes?
I thought the arc of this, I thought it was good. I thought they did a lot in a small amount of time. And they set up a lot of interesting things, and they resisted the urge to go into too much detail about inessential things. And they even made some like clever sort of like narrative decisions to get around those too.
Yeah.
I think like what I'm thinking about here is basically like the Tick's identity and stuff. Cause they did a good job of establishing the world. And maybe that's just because I'm familiar with the Tick family of products or whatever. But, you know, it's like, okay. And well, they're jumping off of like a world where everybody also knows the Marvel Cinematic Universe and every other cinematic universe. So, it's probably pretty easy to establish. Like, here's a world where there are superheroes, but they're kind of normal or weird or whatever.
Right. They're like a part of everyday life, or at least they were for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. But the Tick, they, you know, has sort of a mysterious origin. He appears to have kind of sprung up out of nowhere. And he lacks memory of where he comes from. Like, nobody knows. So that's an interesting thing they kind of bring up, but it's also a great way to kind of make that. They make it like a plot point and like something to be discovered, but they also make it unimportant to the main story, which is interesting.
Right. Then I think it's definitely going to come into play, but like you're not really supposed to be like worrying about it too much right now, I think.
Yeah. And the tick isn't. And I think that's what helps the audience not worry about it so much. He seems fairly unconcerned with the fact that he has no past.
Yeah, so there's no sense of like, oh, we have to deal with his origin and like the exact limits of his powers and like, does he have like a mission, you know, whereas he just sort of like appears from nowhere and is like, hey, let's fight crime. If the terror is still around, let's go fight him.
Yes. Yeah. And that was strong too. And that's another way that it can depart from like some of the Marvel shows, for instance, where they have to spend a lot of time establishing the character's backstory and why they have the powers they have and all that.
Yeah. Although I think the version of that, that the Tick has, is the amount of time they spend getting Arthur to the point where he's willing to be a superhero is that they spend like,
that's
like
basically
four
the
and
main
half
arc
episodes. Yeah. And that it's really not until episodes 5 and 6 that you really, that he's really like, okay, I guess I'm like actually a superhero now, or at least, you know, involved in this story, versus that, basically, after the Tick appears, he's just constantly trying to get out of it, which is, I think, believable and sometimes funny, but also can get a little bit exasperating because you're like, no, I know that you are going to become a superhero.
Right.
Like, you
get to
like,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, like, have I wonder if that's something it suffers from because of the legacy products. Because, like, we know that from that, right? But if you're brand new to the series, I think it would be a lot more believable, or if this had emerged out of nowhere instead of from two previous stories. I think that, because I think that was actually part of its strength, was like number one, that Arthur is the main character, basically. Like the Tick is kind of a supporting character.
Right. Especially in the earlier episodes. I think in the later episodes, it's a little bit more equal, but especially, I was almost surprised, I think, when I saw the first episode and that, you know, the Tick act, Peter Serafinowicz's name comes first before the actor playing Arthur's. And I was like, oh yeah, it's definitely that first episode. It felt like it was the other way around.
Yeah. And I he's the locus of all that. Like he guides the plot. He's the person the plot spins around, right?
Yeah. I mean, partly because he's the one who gets his hands on this suit, which is like sort of has some sort of connection to the terror, and simply because he's figured out that the terror still exists after everyone thinks that he's dead.
Yeah. That's his key power, is that he's not power, but why he's important is that he's realized the terror has faked his death using a really elaborate method that involved pulling out all of his teeth. So
I love that moment, because I mean, you know, he's gonna come back, right? You're like, that'd be silly if I mean,
you know, he's gonna come back from that initial moment where they're like, they overplay it, right? Where they're like, oh, they found his teeth embedded in the crater around.
Exactly. And so that you, for multiple episodes, you've been like, they found his teeth. And then when the first time you see him, not in a flashback, but in the present day, and he smiles and you see these gold teeth, like that is so funny. I loved that.
I thought that was good too. I the show does a good job. This is more of a general thought, but like of not, it's like not laugh out loud funny a lot or like consistently. And I thought maybe it was going to be that, like a nonstop joke fest.
Yeah.
But instead it's like, I think I described it to somebody I was talking to about it as endearing. Like I felt very endeared to the characters and to the story, and I couldn't really put my finger on why, but then the humorous moments are like appreciated and enjoyed when they come, but that was different for it for me from my memory of the other ones, was that they were just kind of like setups for nonstop gags or whatever, almost like a Naked Gun or something. Whereas this was not that. This was like a story with like actual emotion and resonance. And see, that's what I liked. I liked the way that they established, what's his name? Moth guy.
Arthur.
As, I liked that he had that depth and like this. Yeah. They did kind of do away with it after the first, or they didn't indulge in it as much after the first episode, but they did do a lot of callbacks to the like fact of his sort of depression and like mental disorders and stuff like that. So I thought that was really working in its favor versus the Arthur I remember from the cartoons, who was like just a hapless foil for...
Right. And it's mostly just the sight gag of seeing like a chubby guy in a superhero outfit.
Right. That was the whole thing. Yeah.
And you're like, all right, sure.
Yeah. No, this was... Yeah. I thought they did a great job with the characterization with him. And yeah, I think there were moments where I was wishing that it was funnier. But I like watched all the way through and I still want to watch more of it. So.
Yeah. I think interesting thing to think about in that is I realized it, you know, that even though 15 years isn't an enormous amount of time in terms of like the broader culture. And so like, it's not like, 2017 is that dramatically different from like 2001 in terms of like the landscape, but I guess there's just a lot more superhero stuff. So people may be more ready for, you know, a comedy set in a superhero world.
Right.
And then the other thing that's happened is that, so Ben Edlund, who created The Tick, after the 2001 series, he's done a lot of work in television, and including, I think afterwards he worked on, right after that Tick series, he worked on Firefly, he worked on Angel. I think the other showrunner, David Fury, actually worked on both Firefly and Angel and Buffy as well. And I think that Ben Edlund worked on some other TV shows. So I get the sense that, you know, a lot of his, that he was a little bit more of like a sort of purely funny writer before. And he's become a little better at some of the plot and dramatic stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. It felt really well thought out from a story perspective.
While also still being like completely ridiculous and like having like the dog, like I love that you just see this like book cover called Good Intentions, and you're not really sure exactly what it is, and then you just like see the interview with like the dog superhero who wrote the book.
And that came after the episode before where his stepfather is getting gifts,
a copy of the book.
And it's the book written by a dog. You get no additional context, and then like it's cut, it's like end of episode.
Right, you're just like, okay, sure, I guess.
Yeah, that was good. That birthday scene in general was really good. They did a good job.
I like the dad actor. Yeah. I mean, I have to be honest, like anytime I see an Asian American actor in a largely white cast who's supposed to be funny, I always get a little nervous. I'm like, oh no, is it going to be like, you know, ethnic humor? But he was like really like, I just like that he's just like this total like dad figure who just wanted to like hang out with the Tick.
Yes, that was good too. And that made, I mean, it was another thing. And they also did, what they did there where they saved it from something that I thought was going to be bad too, was him and his sister were talking about like the foot stuff and like how his dad always asks about their feet. And I was like, this isn't going to be funny based on what you've said, but they did it. They actually managed to make the delivery good in a way that was like, oh, this is good. This is funny. It's like just weird enough that it's not like off the wall ridiculous. It's just like believably weird kind of.
Yeah. And it's just like a charm. It's almost like that is partly funny, but it's partly just like almost, more of a dramatic moment where you just realize, oh, like this is like a weird family in joke that they have. And you makes you believe more that that's a real family.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that what they really, the real success of the show is like getting, balancing like satire with the lightness and like not being over serious. Like I can't help but think of The Watchmen when I think of this, in part because Jackie Earle Haley or Healy is in both of them or whatever, but it's just such a nice antidote to something like that while still being a good send up of, you know, the superhero stuff in general.
Yeah, I agree. I'm gonna do possibly the nerdiest thing that anyone could do on this podcast, but I'm gonna point out now that it's not The Watchmen; it's just Watchmen.
Oh no! I put a V in it
because the team is not called the Watchmen, it's just that, like, it's an idea of, like, who watches the Watchmen, you know? Like, but it's not like there's a team called the Watchmen. So the series and the movie is just called Watchmen.
That is fair.
Very common mistake, but you did it repeatedly, and I had to say something, Daryl. I had to save you from yourself.
It's not like I'm new to it. I've read the thing.
No, like, people do that all the time, but it is, like, if you pick up your copy, it just says Watchmen. It does not say the Watchmen.
I will pick up my copy, and I will burn it. Because I don't deserve to own it.
wow. Okay. Well, you could just send it to me because then I could have two copies. Okay. I'd like to have two copies. You know, you can read one back and forth. I would say, like, the family. I mean, I think, like, again, I think, like, most of the subsequent episodes after the pilot, I think, are all pretty good. But the birthday party episode is probably my favorite one.
Yeah.
And it did have also my favorite Tick moment, which is when he just first arrives at the party, and the dad says, "Look at you." And the Tick says, "Impossible." And it just such a, like, good. Perfectly encapsulates the character, where he's obviously an idiot, but he's, like, so lovable anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the, like, you talked a bit about how Peter Serafinowicz, like, really nailed it. He nailed it. And it's like, I feel like we can't say enough about the accomplishment of that. That is such a challenging role to do well. I can't even imagine looking at those. Not that I'm an actor or anything, but, like, if you got those lines and you're like, how do I deliver these in a way that is going to work, that's going to hit, right? Like, I think he just did a phenomenal job. And I don't know whether that's down to him or they did a million cuts and had good direction, but, I mean, he has to be part of it, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, it's also, I have to imagine, like, again, not an actor, but that thing of, like, where you, because the role requires you to just be so completely over the top, that must be, like, really, on some level, like, require a certain amount of faith that you're not just going to look like, that the character will look like an idiot, but you won't look like an idiot.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
But, he's great.
Yeah.
And Arthur is good, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He, you know where I saw him most recently was on, the Aaliyah Shawkat TV show?
Search Party.
Yes, Search Party. Did you see that?
I did not.
Oh, he's very good on that. He plays an extremely creepy, friend or suspect or something. So I would recommend that. And I would recommend, I mean, he did a great job in that of being, like, a super creepy weirdo. And so that was, to me, also an acting challenge, was overcoming that, because I he did such a good job that in my head I was just like, this guy is a through and through creep. And then in this, it was like, oh no, he's a sympathetic character who I am on the side of. So that was also, you know, strong acting on his part.
One very small thing that I was really excited about is, so I think a lot of that, so obviously the Tick is, it was shot largely around New York City. And I think, especially in the pilot, a lot of it was shot in my neighborhood of Williamsburg. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but Arthur wears literally the exact same Warby Parker glasses that I do.
Oh, nice.
And it, like, blew my mind. Like, it's just, like, has the exact same, like, little, like, the two color scheme and everything.
Yeah. They were Warby Parker immediately, but I didn't know you had those.
Yeah, my friends were like, "That, don't wear those. Those are ideologically suspect." but I wore them anyway. and now I feel, you know, vindicated.
Nice. Yeah. You have the Arthur, you can say to people.
That's what they should call it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you should be Arthur for Halloween.
Oh, yeah. That would be, I could probably pull that off.
Oh, you could definitely pull that off.
Yeah, just bunny suit.
We're making it happen.
Yeah.
Anything else about plot? Yeah, what do you have?
Oh, I was going to say that, what's the name of that, like, the sort of, like, Punisher type character? What's his name? It's like Killface?
Overkill.
Overkill. I think Killface is also a good name. I think Killface is probably for something else.
Yeah. They did a good job with that, too. That was, I was, like, a little bit surprised at the ultraviolence, because that's how that character is introduced. And it was really a lot. It was very gratuitous. They do it in a way that it's, like, pretty cartoonish, so it's not really, like, hard to take or whatever, but it definitely ups the ante in the show. And I thought that was a good characterization too, like a good setup of the Punisher type.
People. Cool. I think, like, if I'm, as I think back, I think definitely that, especially that first scene where you first meet Overkill, like, that's the one where it's like really like you just see blood and like throats getting cut. And I think in the later stuff, they don't have to go quite as hard on that because they're like, all right, you get the picture. But that first one, you're just like, holy, what is happening?
It kind of comes out of nowhere, like compared to the rest of the series, which is like Tech beating people up for sure, but kind of in a very PG way.
Right. Yeah. But I love like, just like the voice that he has too, I think is just really, just really funny.
Oh, and Alan Tudyk as the voice of Killboat, is I think it's called.
Is that, let me look this up.
Is it Killboat or Deathboat or something like that?
Let's see. It's, what's it, Alan?
But it's Alan Tudyk of Firefly. Danger Boat.
It definitely has all those sort of like, you know, Firefly, Joss Whedon connections.
Yeah. No, I think it's great. I think it's like a, it's almost like a, now I say this knowing that the show is actually bad when you watch it again, but it's like a modern Batman sort of, like it's like a camp kind of thing that's fun. It's like what Batman had in my memory, like the memory place.
The 60s Batman.
Yeah. The 60s Batman.
No, the 60s Batman isn't bad. It's just, it is campy, but it's meant to be campy. And so you enjoy it for that.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. And I like, it's not, they're very different. Very different. Don't get me wrong. But I find that I enjoy this in the same kind of way. Like I almost have a attachment to it. That's sort of like, I don't know, nostalgic or something, or like emotional.
Yeah, just like it's one of those things that makes you feel like, again, except for like the first episode, is like a show that mostly makes you feel like happy to watch. You're just like, oh, this is nice. This is fun.
Yeah. And I think the episodes are just the right length too. Like they're not the hour long. What are they, like 20 minutes or something? Half an hour?
They're like 25. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the right amount of time. Miss Lint is also very good. I know that actress, but I don't know from where. I can't remember where I've seen her before. Do you?
Yeah. No, I don't. I mean, so her name's Yara Martinez. We should also say Griffin Newman plays Arthur.
Yes.
So he's good. Yara Martinez plays Miss Lint. She was also in Jane the Virgin. That might be where you recognize her from.
Maybe so. Yeah. But she's like, she's a good sort of foil for Arthur. Like they have a lot of good scenes together and a lot of good back and forth. And I like her kind of like chaotic neutral or leaning sort of chaotic evil alignment. Is good.
Yeah, I think she's pretty much evil, just like, but in a way that isn't like aggressive
about it,
or that she can still like be in the room and like making jokes and not necessarily killing everyone in the room right away.
Yeah. I think there's, she's pretty firmly evil by the end of the show. There were times during the show where I thought maybe she'd come around more to the neutral side, but
that's right. Yeah.
And who played the Ramses?
Oh, that was Michael Cerveris.
Yes.
Who is
Fringe.
He's from Fringe, yes. He played one of the, what are they called? The like, they were like basically the future people.
Yeah.
Fringe.
I've watched that show many, many, many times, and I still can't remember the names of the characters he played, but the bald guys. With the creepy ball.
Right.
Dance. Yeah.
But he is so much fun. And like when he is like that, just that opening scene where he's like drinking like vitamin water.
Yeah. And then he has the fridge of vitamin water too later. That was very
right. Good. You know, like I don't know how much of that is like product placement, but it's like it works in the show. It's like hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. He was really good. And that was another one thing too, because I am mostly familiar with him from that. Although I think he was on The Good Wife too for a little while. And he was a little bit more.
He's also done like some stage work, so he was like played Sweeney Todd in like the big Broadway revival like about a decade ago, and then he was in Fun Home, which I got to see him in actually like a couple years ago, so I have a playbill at home signed by Michael Cerveris.
He's amazing. It was like very much the opposite of what I knew of him from Fringe, right? And it was a good showcase of his talents too, that he has a lot of range.
Yeah, that was the one thing I was a little bummed out about at the end of episode 6 was when he gets killed off.
Right.
I understood like that, like you got to kind of get that Miss Lint is kind of the more central character and her plotline has to sort of be accelerated. But like Ramses was just so fun to hang out with of all the villains. I would say he was probably like the one that I thought like was just the most fun to see on screen. And so to have him be the one that gets killed off, that kind of bummed me out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Of the three main villains there, he was definitely the best on screen. Like, well, just most interesting. Like, Lint is also good, but like she doesn't have as much to work with in terms of characterization and like fun lines.
Right. She just kind of has this like angst of like, oh, she like loved the terror and like is like angry.
Yeah. Her annoyance at like constant swarm of Lint is pretty funny too, but it's not, it doesn't have the depth of like the Ramsey's character, which, yeah, everything about him is great. The fact that he's like essentially a marketer and, you know, very conscious of his image and all that stuff. And it's like he's fully aware it's a totally artificial image. And who is the, what was the like cat line?
Oh,
go back to like fucking your cats or something like that.
I don't remember.
It's very good. But yeah, he's like, he's doing like an ancient Egyptian shtick, which is, you know, not tied to any like origin moment or anything like that.
No, he just has decided that you need a thing.
Yeah.
And so that is going to be my thing. And you're like, all right, that's cool. I like it.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. I think one other thing I would say is like, the show is obviously not, doesn't have a huge budget. And there are moments when I think the special effects are obviously not that great, or they just don't have the money for like a giant action scene. But it works in the context of the show because I think it's just kind of, you know, it's meant to be a little kind of cheesy and a little silly. And so the fact that like when the dog, when the talking dog, like you can definitely tell that the mouth is just like, there's just like a CGI mouth, like over like a regular dog, like that's fine. It's still really funny. It doesn't bother me.
No, same. And the other parts where you can sort of see the seams that way is like when the tick like jumps away and stuff.
Yeah.
And those look very, very fake, but yeah, it doesn't matter at all. It's not the focus. And this isn't like, this is very much unlike even something like Deadpool. Like the action scenes are not what you come for, and they are not even like sort of side benefits to having come. They're just sort of like there because these are superheroes and they have to have fights and stuff. But yeah, I don't think they're really central in any way.
Well, I think the fight scenes are central just because it's fun to see the tick in action. And so like to see him just sort of like not care about anything.
Yes.
But it's like, because of like what's, it's like the comedy and the character.
The comedy is his imperviousness and just basically him walking around and stuff bouncing off of him.
Right. But whereas, yeah, I agree that in Deadpool, you're still supposed to be like, oh, this is a badass action scene. I don't think any of the action scenes in the tick are supposed to come off that way. They're just supposed to be like funny.
Yeah.
Or in one case, incredibly violent and frightening.
Yes. Yeah. And that was just, again, in service of like setting up the satire or the humor or whatever. I highly recommend this. I think it was a pleasant surprise. I wasn't really expecting much from it going in, to be honest.
Yeah, same. I liked it a lot.
Yeah. Cool. Do you want to cap it there for review?
Yeah, okay. That sounds good. So next week, did you have any thoughts on what you wanted to review?
No, we have. We could get BoJack, probably.
Yes. The other thing I was thinking is that there's like a new Netflix movie called Little Evil with Adam Scott.
I thought you were going to say Adam Sandler, and I was going to just reach through the phone.
Right. That would be fair.
Yeah, I would watch a thing with Adam Scott. That would be good.
Yeah, cool. It's like the guy from the director of Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, we're doing that.
It's like a little like horror spoof. Cool. All right, we'll do Little Evil next time. And of course, we will recap all the news in streaming and content. And we'll be back next week.
Yeah. See you later.